Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, and welcome back to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have the pleasure of talking with Bruce Kesselman, author of 46 Union Street, The Untold Story of Roe Upsilon. This book is a sentimental, humorous, and telling account of the Rutgers University 50-year history, as seen through the eyes of undergraduates and alumni who were members of the Alpha Epsilon Pi fraternity. So a little bit about Bruce before we start. He was raised in Vineland, New Jersey, and shared the everyday experience of most kids growing up in the 60s and 70s. Always interested in history and culture, Bruce achieved a Bachelor of Arts with distinction in Russian at Rutgers College in New Brunswick, New Jersey in 1986. And then went on to found Money Marketing USA, a strategic marketing consulting firm. During the past 30 years, he has been an active volunteer on a regional and national level for Alpha Epsilon Pi Fraternity and the Alpha Epsilon Pi Foundation, unofficially nominated by his fellow alumni as the best candidate to write a book such as this. Bruce took on authoring 46 Union Street with fervor and emotion and eventually initiated plans to provide student scholarships with a portion of the book's proceeds. Since being published, the book has raised over $150,000 for undergraduate scholarships. That is just astounding. When not managing his own business or doing heavy research, Bruce enjoys traveling and geographic photography. He is currently on the Board of Trustees at Temple Beth Om in Aberdeen, New Jersey, where he serves as Executive Secretary and Editor of their award-winning monthly bulletin. Bruce is married and lives in Old Bridge, New Jersey, with his wife and two children. Wow, that is quite a bio. I'm so happy to have Bruce on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Bruce.
Yes, I appreciate your having me on the program.
Well, great, great. So just to be clear, would you kind of talk a little towards Roe Epsilon, the fraternity that you were a chapter of, and Alpha Epsilon Pi fraternity, just so if listeners don't understand the difference?
Sure. There are many fraternities in the United States. And if you want to draw an analogy, they're really like a McDonald's or Burger King franchise. You have a national fraternity, in this case Alpha Epsilon Pi, and then you have individual chapters at various colleges throughout the United States, which would be like the franchise owners of your McDonald's or Burger King. And at Rutgers University, the local fraternity is named Rho Upsilon, which coincidentally are the initials of Rutgers University. And so Rho Upsilon is the local name for the branch of Alpha Epsilon Pi fraternity at that school.
Okay, great. Now, when do students typically begin thinking about fraternities, and when did you become a member of Rho Upsilon?
In most colleges, students think about becoming members in the fall of their freshman year. There's been a trend, especially in the Northeast, to restrict that to the second semester of the freshman year in order to give everyone a chance to get acclimated to the university. There's the perception that if you join a fraternity, it may take time away from your studies, which is certainly an accurate statement. However, there are plenty of freshmen that now are on sports teams, football teams, and many other activities, which I would say certainly take as much time as joining a fraternity. So, you know, whether or not one wants to wait until later in the freshman year or at the beginning is a combination of their own personal situation and the university regulations. In my case, Rutgers University has what's called a deferred freshman rush and has for many years. So in this particular case, you do not join a fraternity until the spring semester of your freshman year, and that was my case. So I really didn't know too much, and I joined in the spring semester of my freshman year.
And what year was that, Bruce?
That was actually 1970. I graduated in 1973, I believe in your introduction you mentioned 1986. That was the year that I founded my business.
Okay.
But I actually graduated in 1973, and so when I joined in 1970, that was a very tumultuous year because it was the year of the Kent State shootings and the big Vietnam War brouhaha. And so one of the interesting things that people have told me they enjoyed about the book is the storytelling of some of the events that went on campus from the viewpoint of the students who were there at Rutgers and some of the reactions that they had versus what happened at Kent State.
During that time. Okay, well, let's just get right into your book. Would you tell listeners what they can expect from 46 Union Street?
Sure. I like to refer to this as a new genre of writing called historical comedy. And what I mean by that is everything in the book is true. I did a lot of research to find out things that I didn't know. And the historical aspects of both the fraternity and what went on at the university over the past 50 years have been interspersed with anecdotes and stories of students surrounding the times and events of the day. So it's not a dry book in terms of reading a history. It goes from historical to comical back to historical, and I think people would find it a pleasant read.
I think that you're right, and I'm glad that you did mention the comedic aspect to it, because some of the stories are just brilliant in their comedy, but at the same time, you know, it does come from an academic and a historic standpoint.
Yes. One of the challenges I had in my book was whether or not to put in footnotes, which I did. And for those people who, you know, end up reading the book, sometimes some of the footnotes are just as funny or funnier than some of the stories, because it tells the history of some of the quotes and where they came from.
Mm. Can you give us an example of a footnote?
Sure. In the mid-1980s, there's an alumnus who graduated by the name of Jeff Grossman, who was the secretary of the fraternity. And in the historical section, it basically just mentions his name and what he did as the secretary. But if you go down to the footnote, you find out that this individual eventually created the MCI ad campaign for 1-800-COLLECT. And the telephone cop, Al Bundy, from Married with Children, is based on an actual incident at the fraternity when visitors' and brothers' phones were used to make international calls with stolen credit card numbers.
Oh, God.
So while no one was fortunately indicted or arrested, these individuals who were mostly visitors to the fraternities ended up serving as the source code, so to speak, for this highly successful commercial.
Funny. That's great. Wealth of information. So, Bruce, how did you come up with the idea for this book?
The idea for the book actually occurred on a weekend where I was sick in bed and, you know, was trying to keep myself occupied. And I realized that the 50th anniversary of the founding of Rutgers University as a state university was coming up, which coincided with the founding of the 50th year anniversary of the fraternity I was in. And I was planning to hold a reunion celebration and thought that perhaps writing a book might be a good hook to encourage people to come to the reunion and serve as a fundraising tool to get more people involved. So as a result, I started making phone calls and doing research, and the excitement about the upcoming event, I think, was promoted as a result of people being actively involved in telling their stories and remembering what went on and giving me hints as to where to find people that sort of had disappeared over the past 50 years.
Now, your research was extensive. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you compiled the massive information that you did into a book?
Yes. For those of you that have not seen my picture, I do wear glasses, and I think after the research, my glasses got thicker.
Uh-oh.
The research consisted primarily of 50% being on the telephone and visiting people, but 50% was actually in the library. And what I did was I went through and read all of the daily newspapers that were published by the Rutgers College Student Group over the past 50 years. I went through yearbooks to locate alumni whose names I had been familiar with but had never met, to find out what type of activities they may have been involved with as undergraduates. And then when I called them, you know, sometimes somebody who played tennis on the varsity tennis team as an undergraduate 40 years later was, you know, in charge of the tennis courts at one of his local swim clubs. So there was a lot of direct correlation in terms of both hobbies and in terms of occupational data that stemmed from the yearbooks and the newspapers and the reporting of the Times for those 50 years.
Mm. Now, you did with the, you know, talking to alumni and undergrads during that time, you did get a really positive response from the people that you contacted. Why do you think that people were so willing to share their stories?
I'd like to think that they were willing to share their stories, you know, because there was a common bond of trying to get this project off the ground. I'm sure in some cases there might have been some ego involved of people wanting to relay some interesting events of their life.
Mm.
But, you know, a great deal of it was triggering their memories on things that had happened that perhaps they had forgotten about. And, you know, a lot of it just came out, and then I had to sort through a lot of duplicate stories, which was good because it verified that they actually happened, as well as some, you know, unusual things that nobody had ever really known about.
Mm. So in all of your research, were you able to define how Roe Upsilon has changed over the past 50 years, and what are your thoughts on how fraternities in general have changed over, you know, this time?
The fraternity, I think, has changed over the past 50 years slightly in two aspects, both of which are concentrated on in the book. And, you know, that change mirrors, I believe, changes at Rutgers University and probably most other universities throughout the United States, which sort of makes this a universally acceptable book, even if you never attended school in New Jersey or joined a fraternity. And those two aspects would be the culture of the times and then the buildings in which people lived and studied.
Mm.
And so in terms of the culture of the times, if you go back 50 years and you look at some of the old pictures, you'll note that everybody had pretty much short hair and crew cuts, which is similar today in 2006, 2007. It's the Army haircut look. But then in the mid-70s, it was the, you know, the bushy-tailed and the Afro-American and the long-haired look.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, the clothing aspect and the cultural aspects of a sea of change that all things change, but then they eventually go back to the way they were. And then the second aspect would be the buildings, because the fraternity house that most people lived in was eventually torn down due to condemnation, and a new one was built in its place. And at most universities, you have similar building occurrences now where old buildings are being renovated, the populations of students are coming in, and so they have to build new ones. And there's always this tension between you know, the bureaucracy of the city and the building codes and the people that have to occupy the buildings and get in there for either living conditions or studying conditions.
Mm. That's so interesting. So what do you think is the fascination with fraternities? You know, we usually hear of the negative aspects of it, but what do you think are, you know, the positives in joining and becoming a member of a fraternity?
I think the positive aspects of joining a fraternity are something that most people really don't see or understand or buy into until after they've actually been in one for about a year or so, and that includes myself. I only joined a fraternity because at the time there was a housing shortage and I was not going to be able to get a dormitory room.
Oh, no.
So I really knew very little about fraternities. I had heard these stereotype negative aspects of, you know, people getting drunk and falling on their faces, and I certainly was not looking forward to that. It turned out that those incidences were true only for those people that really wanted to get involved. It's not something that was forced upon anybody. But the positive aspects after being in the fraternity for a year were making close friendships that have lasted to this day. In most of the years, it's the gaining of leadership experience. I know, you know, even 30 years ago, if you had 50 members of a fraternity and they were paying $1,000, $2,000 a semester, which today is probably $10,000 a semester, and you were treasurer, you were dealing with a $100,000, $200,000 budget. So, you know, there were a lot of good future skills that were developed for those people that ended up in business. Learning to run a budget, you know, operating a checking account with $200,000-$300,000, planning schedules, coordinating events. So, you know, as a an apprentice type situation for work, for those who took advantage of it, it was an excellent experience.
That sounds
obviously
like...
there were people that, as in any club or any organization, you know, were there and you never knew they were there and you've never seen them since.
Mm-hmm. So it was an incredible learning experience, and it really is up to the individual what they want to make of it.
I would say that's true. There's peer pressure on all sides in anything you do. There's peer pressure by the partiers to party all the time and drink all the time, but then there was peer pressure by those of the studious vein who wanted to make sure that the fraternity was one of the top on campus and got the academic award, and you basically had to find out, where you fit in. And I think, you know, with rare exception, most fraternities today, while they may have a stereotype of being a jock house or being a drinking house or what have you, that's only one aspect because fraternities are much more diversified than they were 50 years ago, being homogenous. You get all types that join. You just may have a certain group that are a plurality, and so that's how they get their reputation.
I see. So how do you think that your book can actually be used as a positive influence for students and their families? How will this information and seeing the history and the change and, you know, the real positives, how do you think that that can be used?
Well, I think if parents are concerned about their children joining a fraternity or a sorority, if they read my book, they'll get a good balanced picture of the good and the bad, and hopefully more of the good. That should allay a lot of their fears. I think it gives people that have no idea about a fraternity some insight as to what goes on. And I will say that probably, and again, I went to a large state university, the fraternities at larger universities are probably more of a draw from a voluntary standpoint, in that people will join them because they want to become part of a cohesive smaller unit rather than get lost in a sea of 5,000 or 10,000 students on campus. So that's the major benefit at a larger university. I can't really speak to the smaller colleges where perhaps fraternities are more of a mandatory type of thing in the eyes of the students because they feel if they don't join, they're not going to be part of campus life. That may or may not be true. I really can't speak to that. But at the larger universities and colleges, it certainly provides a more intimate place to relate to people and, you know, feel a sense of importance and responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had mentioned the Kent State incident. What are some of the other major world events that you chronicle during the last 50 years?
One of the events I remember was President Jimmy Carter coming to campus to speak, and the members of the fraternity that I was involved with volunteered to serve as guards on the rooftops of some of the buildings as the motorcade went down. So that was one situation. I'm trying to think in the, throughout the history, there have been, from a positive standpoint, dance marathons. The first dance marathon in the nation to raise money for cancer, I believe, was started at Rutgers University by another fraternity in the 70s. And then today, throughout the United States, you have all these dance-a-thons and basketball-a-thons of people raising money. So that was something that I remember. And then there are always the concerts, which a few of them are chronicled, and that's a social outlet for the students. My book tells about some of the fraternity members who attempted to raise money by selling tickets for the concerts and did not do so well and actually ended up with a loss, which is more of the comical aspect. But, it does bring back names of famous people who at the time may not have been famous but since went on to achieve notoriety.
Mm-hmm. I think you also backdrop, major world events like the JFK assassination, John Lennon, and Watergate?
Yes. The Kennedy assassination occurred before I got to college.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing my research, I found out that for the day and the next 3 days after the assassination, the fraternities on campus, which used to play touch football on the main street where the houses were located, just stopped doing that. And so, that was verified by a number of people, and it's something I would not have thought about happening, but, when you look back, it's sort of a sociological aspect that shows how the students related to what was going on in the world.
Mm.
The John Lennon shooting occurred, and Alpha Epsilon Pi, by and large, is a Jewish fraternity, non-discriminatory, and certainly all folks are welcome and have joined, but on that particular night that John Lennon was killed, it was one of the nights of Hanukkah, and so there were events occurring that ceased and, were tabled as a result of that event. And then I guess the last one that you mentioned, Watergate, there was an incident in our fraternity house where one of the brothers, in effect, created a similar situation of cover-up because it involved the famous Jewish food of the Passover season called matzah. And this brother had purchased a lot of matzah boxes for the members of the fraternity who were Jewish and wanted to eat matzah. But it was not the approved type that the rabbis would have considered kosher. And then he had a cover-up by tearing off all the labels and trying to hide the fact that the matzahs were not kosher for Passover. This was eventually discovered, and, there's a direct correlation to what happened in that particular case versus the Watergate events.
Mm, that is funny. That is so funny. Now, speaking a little bit towards the social change aspect that's happened over the past 50 years, I understand that your book, 46 Union Street, has been ordered by a number of college professors that they're actually going to use in their sociology classes. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes, that's a relatively recent occurrence. I had inquiries so far from three different professors, one at a large, well-known school and two at two smaller schools that ordered a copy and then indicated to me they were going to be purchasing some more to, you know, have as optional reading in one case and required reading at another smaller college in their sociology class. Having never taken a sociology course, I can't really speak to how that would impact on the class. But obviously, the the stories of the conflicts between studying versus going to a party, the issues of loyalty to the fraternity versus loyalty to your parents, and a number of other aspects of the times are addressed in there, and I imagine that's what caught their interest. So it's a little too soon to tell, but I'm encouraged. I had thought originally that, if anything, the history professors might have more of an interest, and that tends not to be the case. It tends to be more sociological.
That is fascinating. Now, I mentioned really briefly in the bio the fact that proceeds from your book are actually going towards undergraduate scholarships. I really would like to dedicate some time for you to talk to this and why you decided to donate profits from sales.
Yes. One was sort of selfish and one was altruistic. The selfish part was in order to publish a lot of the photos that are in the book, and in order to get releases from people for the stories and not get into any legal trouble, the initial promise and intent was that the profits would go towards undergraduate scholarships. And so, without that commitment in advance, I don't think I would have gotten the cooperation from university officials, from people that had historic photos or information. So that was the premise that enabled me to get a lot of cooperation. And then from an altruistic standpoint, I wasn't really sure how well the book would sell and didn't really expect to make a lot of money anyway. It turns out it's making more money than I thought. And so, the idea of promoting and encouraging people to join a fraternity by use of the dollar figure that, for those who join at Rutgers and join the particular fraternity I was in, there could be the incentive of getting some scholarship money was a good thing, because, it might encourage people to join a fraternity that might not otherwise think of doing so. And if they did and they did well in their studies, then they would get scholarship money. So the money is being, coming in dribs and drabs. The initial funds that came in were used to pay the printing company for the book. There were legal expenses and things of that nature. And so as those have been paid off, then anything subsequent to that gets put into a fund that's an endowment, and it goes through the proper procedures. You'd have to apply for a scholarship by using certain forms, and there is a committee that will decide who gets the scholarships and so on.
Sure. Well, if $150,000 is what you've donated or what's gone towards the scholarship program so far, that really says something about the interest in your book. That is incredible.
Yes. Like I said, it goes in spurts, and it's word of mouth, and it may be at the peak and it may not be. There's a new show on ABC Family, I guess I can give them a plug, called Greeks.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that show. Did you see it?
I did. I was somewhat apprehensive because I assumed that there would be a lot of negative stereotypes about fraternities. And I was pleasantly surprised that While there certainly were some stereotypes, they had the blue blood prep fraternity, and they had the fraternity of misfits. The storylines, if you paid attention, really revolved around moral issues, including loyalty. There were issues of sexuality and how that would affect relationships of people that were involved in fraternal life. And so I thought that the plot lines, if you paid attention to them, were very well done, and hopefully will continue to show the thought that goes behind an individual's involvement in the fraternity. And, perhaps some of my stories at some point might make it to the show as well.
I was going to ask you, do you have any interest in submitting some of those stories?
I certainly do. I've consulted with some attorneys, and the difficulty is to make sure that, the stories are protected before they are submitted, because a lot of the stories can be generically changed, and, if they are going to be used, then I would certainly want to have any payments or proceeds go towards the scholarship fund.
Oh, well, that's fair. Absolutely. I imagine you would have to protect the legalities of all of that. So one last question. Well, it's not the last question, but it is kind of a wrap-up question. I'd like to know how being a part of Rho Upsilon changed your life.
I think being part of Rho Upsilon changed my life in that wherever I go on vacation or on business, if I'm willing to do the research and make the phone calls, there are usually people I can find that were friends or that know people that I know. And so it's made my social life more interesting beyond college, because I can have friends and I can meet people that have something in common with me, even though it's 20, 30 years later, and in some cases I may never have met them. And we have this commonality that allows me, to just pick up a phone, and if I'm in town on business one day, call someone up and, for the most part, get a good reaction and be able to maintain contact with people or meet new people from a networking standpoint.
Would you say the leadership skills and, all of that has influenced your life?
I believe it has. Mm-hmm. I'm active in my synagogue as an officer and have done a number of volunteer work for them, and many of those skills are directly related to the same type of activities that I was involved with when I was in college, hopefully at a more advanced professional level, but certainly the way you go about it is something that I was fortunate to learn. And, again, in those cultural changes of a fraternity, there's the ebb and flow. Fraternities change. You get periods where you have extremely dynamic people that are interested in leadership, and then you get your lulls of those who are not so interested and just want to sit back and relax. But that's the case, I think, of life in general.
Well, sounds great, Bruce. Just a few final things. How can readers find out more about you and 46 Union Street and purchase this book?
Well, if you're in New Jersey, you can certainly go to the Rutgers University Bookstore in New Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
They've got copies of it. If you're not in New Jersey, the best way would be to go to the website www.levinejudaica.com, LevinejuDaica.com, which is a New York bookstore concentrating on books with Jewish themes, and it's listed under the American History subsection of their books. And you could read about some of the reviews that have taken place by some of the people that have read it.
Great. And I think also if you do a search on that website, you just punch in 46 Union Street with street abbreviated?
Yes, you can go on the Levine Judaica website As soon as it pops up, there's, I think, a line that says Advanced Search, and you can put in 46 Union ST, which will bring you right to the book, or you can go to the book section and then scroll down through American History,
and eventually
you'll get to it.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Bruce, it has been great talking with you today, and I just want to give you the final minute here to share any lingering thoughts you have towards your book, Fraternities, or anything you like.
I would just say to, you know, to those of you listening out there, you know, who may be pack rats or may keep diaries, you know, keep your old photographs, keep your old memoirs, write in a diary, and who knows, you know, one day you may end up deciding to write a book on a subject, as I did, and those old photographs and notes will come in handy.
Great. Great final words. Thanks so much, Bruce.
Thank you for having me.
Much luck and much success to you.
Thank you.
All right.
Right.
All right, listeners, thank you so much for listening today. It's been great talking with Bruce Kesselman, and I sincerely hope you check out his book, 46 Union Street. The website, once again, levinejudaica.com. That's levinejudaica.com. As well, if you're in New Jersey, at the Rutgers University Bookstore. You can also find a recent book review and online interview with most of this information regarding purchasing Bruce's book at readerviews.com. Well, thank you again for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.